The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Now, welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio. You know, we've talked a lot about sports gambling on this program. They're talking about it even more in Springfield. In fact, there's a committee considering an amendment today. Amy Guth will be along a little bit later in the program to talk about where we are there. Remember, FanDuel and DraftKings, they're still in battle. And FanDuel says, well, it's offering a little bit of a carrot if they're allowed to play in the sports gambling market here. So that's coming up later in the program. The big thing we're watching right now has to do with Wall Street and tariffs and trade and all of that. The Dow was up 100 points earlier today. Then it was down near even, and it's started to pick up again in the past several minutes. Terry Savage is here from terrysavage.com and just about everywhere else to look at personal finance. What do you make of the Wall Street numbers today?
This is volatility personified. I mean, we actually opened up down 60 or 70 points, came back to a plus 100. Now we're at the moment just a little over 90 points up. Well, Wall Street doesn't know whether all this posturing is a good thing or a bad thing. Let's back up to just last Friday when every single bit of news was good. We had great employment numbers, great jobless numbers. We had
a million more jobs available than there are unemployed workers in this country.
Exactly. So you ought to be able to find a job if you ought to be able to pay off your student loan debt with a job that you can now get. So that was all very good news. And jobs, the economy growing at over 3%, productivity growing, real wages, not inflation wages, real wages growing. And so the market, you know, it came right up to its last all-time high. So we'll have to see if this is twin peaks, a double top, or whether it can gather momentum and go higher. But just when everything looked absolutely perfect and the market was priced to reflect that last Friday, came this message from the Chinese trade delegation that they were going to reconsider almost everything that had been previously negotiated. And that's pretty reliable information on that. And then the president tweeted, oh, yeah? Want to see? And so that really set the market.
I think
on
China called them edits. They were making some edits to the
document. Right. That's like, you know, like in the Mueller papers, you know, certain things are blacked out.
Okay, 12-12, and you brought up the Mueller report. I'm not sure I was ready for that.
No. Well, I just brought up redacted edits, whatever it is.
So
the point is, now the markets know the economy is good. They also know that if there really are another round of tariffs, that it's going to distort things. It's going to lead to the possibility of inflation because prices of everything we import will go up. Everything we import from China will go up. And that potentially down the road could lead to higher interest rates. I mean, this is the market thinking ahead. The market also knows that companies who think that rates might go up and who have distorted world trade patterns may not invest as much in plant and equipment. So it's a big negative for the market. And by the way, the markets are just mad that they thought everything was fine and now it's not.
So we're talking about $200 billion in increased tariffs that are set to go into effect at midnight on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm assuming that means going into Saturday?
Well, it's an increase in the tariffs that were existing from 10% to 25%, and then new tariffs that would go on. It's a very brinksmanship kind of thing, but I have to give credit. This is hard for me to do, you know. But to the fact that this is not so much about...
Let me get to that in 1 second,
okay?
Because I know you're going to get there. But the other thing about these new tariffs is that the old ones hit things that were mostly commercial, right? Not retail. These new tariffs would be more on retail products, which would hurt Walmart, Target, and those of us who are going shopping on Saturdays more than
much
the previous
more ones. So. Exactly.
Oh, so we would feel these more.
Exactly. And just to finish out that point, they were very strategic, the Chinese, in where they put their retaliation. They know that the farm states are very important for this president to carry, and they aren't buying any soybeans from us. Now, where do those soybeans go? They get sold. They get shipped to Brazil, and then China buys them in Brazil. Well, that cost is really impacts our farmers because they get a lower price because it's a global market for, say, soybeans. So the point is they knew just where to squeeze the Chinese when they did their tit for tat. Now, this retaliation, I've always said nobody wins a trade war. Okay, everybody loses, the people that put the tariffs on, because their own end users and customers pay more. But here's the point I was going back to make, which I make sort of begrudgingly. This hasn't really been about you're not letting this product in or your tariffs on this or that. This has been a lot about the rules of trade and things like industrial espionage and trade secrets and violations of what we consider the basic legal and moral principles on which trade rests. And nobody's really ever called the Chinese to the table on this. And it's a big game of brinksmanship. But if the president, the U.S. side, wins, it'll be beneficial in the long run, but it could be painful in the short run.
So the war could be worth it. The battle could
be worth
it.
We'll see how skillfully it's waged and how long it lasts.
All right. And if not, we will need medication. And that's what I want to talk about next. So
okay.
The Trump administration.
That's a very strange segue.
That's okay. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar announced that they've settled on these rules now for TV advertisers for drugs. The 10 most commonly advertised drugs have prices ranging, this is per month, from $488 to $16,938
per
month. The
brand name drugs, and not the ones they don't all have generics.
The ones that we see the commercials for on TV. There's a new rule going into effect that on those TV commercials, they're going to have to tell us how much the drug costs a month.
I love it. I think full disclosure is required for markets to operate efficiently, and it's required. Transparency is required for doctors and patients to make decisions about what's covered by insurance, what people can afford, because it does no good to prescribe an expensive drug if no one takes it.
And so the idea is that a lot of us watch these TV commercials and think, oh, I've got that. I need that drug, right? And so if we see that it costs $4,000 a month, although that's not really going to, that's not a fair representation if we've got health insurance, right?
Well, so that leads to the first level is what's the price on the board? Let's think of it going into, I guess, McDonald's as opposed to, you know, the Big Mac calories are 682 or whatever it is. And you could see a salad will be only 212
right,
or whatever.
Right.
So that's the list price. Oh, that's like going online now for a car. You know what the sticker price is. But the question is, are you paying that? It depends on how you buy your medicines. Now, the one critical thing is Medicare, which, you know, Part D drug programs, cover the vast majority of drug purchases in some form or another, and Medicare's not allowed to negotiate off-the-list prices.
So the Democrats, of course, there always has to be an argument against. The Democrats don't like this. They say they would rather see Medicare have the authority to negotiate drug prices. Now, tell me why in the world Medicare wouldn't have the authority to negotiate drug prices.
That was the influence of the drug companies when Medicare.
So you've got this huge buying block, and we, as people who pay into it, have no say into.
Let me give you, just for the sake of it, the argument, okay? It doesn't hold a lot of water with me, but it is an argument that no drug companies would invest in cures for which there are not a vast majority of users. They wouldn't make the tremendous research and development to find cures for these illnesses or system conditions if they couldn't recoup the cost of research. That's what the drug companies say. But once a drug's been out for a while, then comes a generic, and you can see when drugs go off branded to generic and they get a generic copy, then you get a real hit to the drug company's profits. So somewhere in here, first of all, consumers should know what their medicines cost. Second of all, the doctors should be telling them and consumers should search for alternatives. And it will hold the doctor's feet to the fire who prescribe these things as opposed to generics. But mostly it'll hold the drug companies to a better pricing model. So you may have fewer drugs on the side unless they raise money from some venture capital to hopefully get the blockbuster drug that ends cancer for a minute, let me say. But basically the drugs that everybody takes would be priced more reasonably because of this pressure, because of transparency.
We can only hope. All right, one of the nice things about TerrySavage.com is you can go to her website, read the columns that she puts up if you're not picking them up in the paper or elsewhere, and she can explain to you very complicated things that make my eyes glaze over.
This is one of them.
This is a tough
one. But it's important.
In a way that can help you understand. And I had never considered this. So inheriting an IRA.
Now watch this. Most of us who get to the certain stage in life look at the numbers in the IRA and say, how can I make it last as long as I do? That's a real problem for people who get, you know, to Social Security and retirement age. Very few think too much about what if there's money left over, you know? But it is an issue. And you, of course, should name a beneficiary to your IRA. It could be your spouse, it could be your child, it could be anyone else. But as long as you name a person, the person who's the beneficiary gets certain rights after you die. So let's just say you do die and there's a nice balance left in your IRA. Then the first message you want to give before you die, I mean, when you're doing your discussion with your family is, look, just in case there's money left over, this is not an inheritance windfall that you go out and spend, that you buy a new car.
It's not like a savings account.
It's not like a savings account. It's not like life insurance, which comes to you and you get it and you can decide what to do with it. The most important thing to do with an IRA that you inherit is nothing right away, except to roll it over, which your custodian will do for you, into, instead of John Jones who died, it'll be rolled over into the estate of the decedent John Jones, Mrs. Sally Jones account.
Okay.
And then, depending on whether you're the spouse or the child or someone else, not related, but if you're the spouse, you get certain rights. And some of those rights include, and I won't get into the complications, you can roll it over and you can keep it going. A spouse could keep the inherited IRA or roll it into her own and not be required to take distributions till age 70 and a half. But that might give you many more years of tax-deferred growth, and the withdrawals will be over your life expectancy. If you're not a spouse, you have to start taking out the following year.
The point is, if you take it out too quickly in the wrong way, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
You're going to pay taxes on all of it,
right,
and you lose all that future tax-deferred growth. And that's really important. Now, this column, we had a minute here, this column was set up by one of you who posted on my blog a question about inheriting an IRA. This is such a complex subject. There is a website run by the guru of IRAs, my friend Ed Slott, and it's IRAhelp.com. And there he creates a certified elite group of IRA experts. And what I did was search for one in Chicago, and I happened to get Tony Pondell, who's quoted in the column. And, I mean, we went back and forth. Okay, now when it's a spouse, this, but if she doesn't roll it into her own IRA, she could still withdraw without penalty. If she's younger than 59 and a half, there are a zillion rules, and you need to deal with it, especially if you are not a spouse, because you are going to have to start taking RMDs, but over your long lifetime. So you need to know the rules.
All right, very quickly, what if it's left to children? What if the IRS?
Well, the other thing is,
the IRS is left to like three children. Do they have to liquidate it right away?
No. The account will be divided, and they can each roll over their portion, and then they will have to start taking RMDs. But the one thing you don't want to do is leave it to your 2-year-old grandchild, because then the state will step in and manage the IRA and so on and so forth. So it's very complicated. First, three rules: name a beneficiary to your IRA. Update that right now. It's no big deal. You don't need to do any big legal stuff. Just call the mutual fund company or the bank and say, who's the beneficiary now? Oh, my God, we got divorced. Or, oh, my goodness, that person died. So name the beneficiary. When you inherit it, seek help about what the rules are that apply to you regarding distributions. Do not take the money out and pay the taxes. And then, if you're keeping the IRA as an inherited IRA, name your own beneficiary so that the next person doesn't have a problem.
All right, check it out. It's spelled out pretty clearly at terrysavage.com. All right, go have a good week, will you, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Coming up a little bit later in the program, we'll be joined by a representative of FanDuel. In fact, Amy Guth will be here to talk about the Daily Gist, the podcast. She's talking about FanDuel today. FanDuel talking about what's going on in Springfield. So we'll hear from both of them a little bit later. But first, from Springfield, is it true that I heard J.B. Pritzker, the Democratic governor, thank Donald Trump for a booming economy? Frank Senate, could that be true?
Yeah, it seems like it. Pritzker has dropped plans to defer making almost $1 billion in required state pension fund payments this year. And he's saying that it's because of rising tax receipts from the booming economy. So, yeah, politics makes strange bedfellows.
But the thank you note didn't quite. He didn't sign a note, or I don't know if he mentioned President Trump by name, did he?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, I know you're being a little facetious, but it certainly is an unintended positive consequence for the state of Illinois.
Well, and tell me, it's a good thing for Pritzker, it seems to me, because in these days of talking only about pension reform, or, you know, that we're so worried about it, the plan they had before was sort of the plan we've had before, right? Kicking it the can down the road a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So Greg Hines, you know, found out that they do not have any intention to do anything in the current General Assembly regarding kicking the can or extending the ramp, as they always call it.
Right.
They say that those ramp considerations are still available for future years, but because state tax revenues overall will be up about 7% this year and projected 4% next year, they're going to just make the payments.
Right, and so just to reiterate that, because, you know, we talk about the jobs numbers a lot, but because the economy is doing well, the state's going to get, what, 7% more in actual dollars or in projected dollars this coming year?
So 4% next year is the projection,
okay.
About 7% this year.
Yeah, it's more. And but Susana Mendoza, the state controller, is trying to throw a bit of a wet blanket on some of this?
She's counseling caution on the tax windfall because she notes that the state has still a backlog of up to $8 billion in unpaid bills, and that the projections may or may not be, you know, crystal clear.
So think of that, $6 to $8 billion if you're a vendor waiting for your check from the state of Illinois. The good news is we've got a little extra money this time, and rather than spend it, maybe we're going to actually put it toward pension reform.
That's right.
Hey, I was hanging with your boss last night, Jim Kirk, at the James Tyree semifinalist event, the James Tyree Award from the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. I just love it. The past 3 years, they do sort of a Shark Tank semifinalist round. There were 12 companies there that made pitches last night, and six of them move on to the next round. Jim was one of the judges, but thanks to the Chicagoland Chamber for including me in that. And we had only good things to say about you, Frank.
Well, you know, I bribe him, you know, sandwiches, you know, drink here and there, that kind of thing.
He had mentioned that, and so far I've seen none of it, but...
Yeah, I need to start bribing you. I need to put you on the payroll, too.
You don't need to bribe me for nothing. Okay, so I grew up in Manteno, part of the Twin Cities of Manteno, Piatone. Manteno always going first. There's been talk about putting a airport in the Piatone area forever. It really picked up steam maybe in the past 10 or 15 years. And now the proponents of it, I think Robin Kelly, the congresswoman from the area, says, hey, we've got all of this cargo shipping going on because of Amazon and all of that. That could be justification for a third airport in Piatone. Joe Cahill in Crane says, maybe not. The numbers aren't quite there.
Yeah, so as we all know, I've been around watching the politics in Illinois for a while. The whole third airport in Piatone conversation kind of petered out, but for, you know, 10, 12 years or so, it was a hot button issue. I know the Chicagoland Chamber back then, speaking to them, were pushing it. And now, as you say, Congresswoman Robin Kelly is bringing up the idea of spending $150 million on roads to support infrastructure improvements to support the Piatone Airport idea for you know, all this cargo shipping.
It's interesting, though, because it seems logical, right? We get things delivered at a door all the time by the Amazon man, so there must be more shipping by air. But that's not necessarily the case. The shipping by air, while it's not decreasing, it's certainly not increasing at a very rapid pace.
Yeah, so Boeing is predicting that global air cargo traffic will grow at about 4.2% annually through 2037. So it'll more than double over that time frame, but that's a long time frame. And in North America, the forecast is to rise just 2.3% annually. So, you know, the question is there enough pressure, a need for that third airport? So it's a tricky question right now.
Yeah, I guess only the expensive items or perishables or drugs, things like that, are shipped by air. The rest of it comes via truck. Frank Sennett from Cranes. You can read more at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
I'll look for the bribe. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So I think it's safe to say that Chicago is one of the resident experts with the Amazon Go stores in the U.S. I mean, we have four in the downtown area, and we've gotten pretty good at walking in, grabbing stuff off the shelf, and strolling out like we're cool, but feeling incredibly suspicious. However, New York just rolled out their first Amazon Go store, but they accept cash.
What are you talking about?
It's because many were saying that these stores were discriminatory against those without bank accounts, so there will be a handful of mobile checkout persons to help people pay with cash. Ah, but whatever, New York, you stay weird. And Chicago is going to keep making money. A Bloomberg report noted that the Chicago hedge fund Citadel has made 10% this year on their portfolio alone. If you're a little foggy on what the hedge funds do, they take individual people's and companies' money, a lot of it, and they invest it in markets and other ways to make even more money. And when I say a lot of money, I mean a lot of money. They manage $30 billion. So let's get that paper. I'm Bennett Wake Knight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. A big house hearing a little bit later today on gambling. And Amy Guth is in the studio as well. She's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast we talk about. You can pick it up every afternoon at WGNRadio.com. And ahead of this hearing, FanDuel said one of the online gambling sites, that they want to bring jobs to Chicago. What's this about?
Yeah, so FanDuel has proposed, said, hey, if you legalize gambling in Illinois, we'll put this office there and bring 300 jobs, which is an interesting idea considering that Iowa and Indiana both seem a little further ahead in legalizing gambling. And it's a really interesting kind of business strategy move to try to, I think, dangle a carrot ahead of lawmakers.
Well, we talked to Chairman Zalewski a couple of weeks ago about the bill, and he mentioned that it's a race with Iowa and Indiana, but there are no coincidences in politics, right? And that's why we go to Springfield and say hello to Corey Fox. He's a senior counsel for FanDuel. Corey, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Amy. Hey, Steve. Nice to talk to you.
All right. So how about this no coincidence, right? You could be doomed by a vote in the House committee today. There's an Amendment 2 that would ban you from participating in this online gambling in Illinois.
We're not too worried that will happen today, but we're certainly, a little bit concerned. FanDuel has been serving Illinois customers with their daily fantasy sports products for a number of years. Recently, with the change to federal law allowing states to authorize sports betting, I apologize, I'm standing outside here in Springfield and there's a truck going by, but recently with the change to federal law, some states have been authorizing sports betting. FanDuel has proven itself to be a leader in the online sports betting market. We're currently generating about 50% of the revenue in New Jersey, where there's sort of the most advanced mobile online sports betting market so far. And so we're concerned about this proposal that would try to keep out-of-state companies from Illinois.
What the amendment says in this Amendment 2, it would prohibit any entity that participated in unlawful gambling operations from receiving a sports wagering license. I guess they're relying on an opinion from then Attorney General Lisa Madigan that you guys were breaking the law by advertising here in Illinois.
Yes, I understand there's some concern about that, but I think the key here is that having FanDuel and DraftKings in the market, who are licensed and registered in 20 states to provide, fantasy sports products and licensed in several states to provide sports betting products, will deliver the most revenue to the state of Illinois, just as FanDuel has it in the state of New Jersey. And also, the reason for that is that we're delivering the best customer experience for sports fans who want to go online and play. So we think Illinois really would be best served by having these companies in the market. And we're excited to come make that point here in Springfield.
Are you conceding or were you breaking the law when you were advertising here before?
No, of course not. I understand that there was some concern about that. FanDuel and DraftKings, as well as a number of smaller operators, filed suit over that advisory opinion to make it clear that our fantasy sports operations were legal here in Illinois. And we'd like to work with the legislature to clarify the law, but certainly FanDuel only operates where we believe and know that we're legal on advice of counsel, and we've always believed that and wouldn't be operating here otherwise.
To me, this really points to a much bigger conversation about new guard and old guard within the gambling industry. The new guard, of course, being so tech driven and tech heavy. But of course, with that comes a lot of issues and considerations within technology with, geofencing and controlling someone's location and monitoring abuse of gambling and things like that, that I think are really interesting. What is your comments on that?
Yeah, so FanDuel is a technology company. We've got hundreds of software engineers, and we've gained our advantage in fantasy sports and now sports betting by delivering great products that are also compliant with state laws. And so we have know your customer technology and geolocation technology to ensure that we know where our customers are and who they are. But also we deliver the best experience with great technology. But I'd say, well, there is somewhat of an old guard and a new guard. We want to work with the existing gaming industry in the states where we operate. We partner with the Meadowlands Racetrack in New Jersey, and we would partner with a casino. We have a partnership with a casino here in Illinois as well. So it's not us versus them. It's about letting some of these new technology companies partner with existing gaming operators in the state to deliver the best experience for Illinois customers.
What are your odds? What do you think?
We feel really good about it. The governor, as you probably have seen, has said that he intends to deliver some $200 million of revenue for the budget by authorizing sports betting. We've heard great things from leadership in both houses. And Representative Zaleski has been an amazing champion of fantasy sports and now sports betting in the legislature. So we feel really good about our odds. We think very likely over the next few weeks you'll be hearing about a sports betting being authorized here in Illinois to join along with Indiana, Iowa, and Tennessee, which have recently passed laws authorizing sports betting.
Corey Fox is the senior counsel at FanDuel. All right, Corey, go inside, will you? The hearing's starting in a couple hours.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks for joining us on such short notice. We appreciate it.
Interesting that he mentions New Jersey, because the New Jersey model is an interesting one to watch, because so much of that, it really points to convenience wins out. A lot of people have generated a lot of revenue from using these app-based gambling sites.
And you talked to Danny Ecker on the Daily Gist about that?
I did, and we really did open up a much bigger conversation around, you know, we're having kind of a similar one around recreational marijuana legalization right now, right? It's about shifting attitudes around things that at one time were taboo or might still be a bit taboo, and how we evolve in that conversation.
All right, we'll look for it later this afternoon.